Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Thursday, May 19th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we choose to spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free on the internet at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the Start Here link in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for almost 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again. You can also go to your App Store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness, and you'll, before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. And if you choose to tap on it, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process and or given powerful testimonials about how the use of these tools has improved their life, and or asked really poignant questions about how we can understand what gives this simple tool such power and effectiveness. We hope you do that soon and often. Access the tool, try it out for yourself. Because it's our experience that it improves our life quality when we do that. It also tends to promote comments and questions and answers and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, give us a call at 563-999-3581 and press 1. Or shoot us an email at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or Jeannie at Jeannie at whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. If we get an email from you asking a question, promoting a testimonial, or asking for support, we will respond on the internet show and, as time allows, send you a notice about what day and time the comment or question was addressed, and you can listen to the the discussion of it in the archives. And the archives are also available at whyagain.org. Not just a few that have been curated out as highlight programs, but the full array of programs that have been published since January of 2011. So it's over 11 years now of at least 1 hour a day, 5 days a week for the first 8 years, and now for the past 3 years plus, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. So if you have any comments or questions and you would like support or discussion of those comments or questions, please let us know. One more time, the call-in number is 563-999-3581. We've been working with the Way of Mastery, and yesterday we finished the second time through of the 10th lesson titled The Way is Easy and Without Effort. And now, if there aren't any comments or questions, we'll move into Lesson 11. And Lesson 11 is titled A Meditation into the Heart of Christ. And this lesson is more of a suggested guided visualization. The text reads, "Join with me in this moment. Join with me in the place where alone two minds can join, for the body cannot bring you to where I am. Join with me in the silent place of the heart in which all wisdom already abides. Join with me then in this moment in the place prepared for us of our Creator before time is. Join with me in choosing now to allow your attention to relax from the world and the things of the world. Allow your eyes to gently close for just a moment as a symbol of your willingness to set aside your environment with your involvement with your environment and your attachment to the things of this created world. Join with me by allowing the body to be set free. This requires only that you make no demands upon it. Indeed, let it settle in as though it was becoming again of the dust of the ground from which it came. Join with me as you let your attention recede from the world around you. Begin to notice the thoughts that seem to stream through the mind. Join with me by moving ever yet deeper, as though you were allowing your attention to settle down, down into the heart. And as the thoughts stream through the mind, can you tell from whence they have come? Can you tell where they have gone? They arise in a moment and fade away in a moment, while you, your essence, continues to relinquish your attachment to all things of the world. I say unto you, even the thoughts that arise and stream through the mind ceaselessly, these are of the world. Settle down then, abiding in the gentle quiet of the heart. You do not cause the physical heart to beat and thereby send the blood through the body. It simply knows and it does. you do not cause the breath to flow through the body. It arises and passes away. It does not require your attention. And in this moment, it is you that keep the stars. Is it you that keeps the stars in the sky above you? Is it you that keeps your beautiful earth spinning, hurtling through space around and around your central sun, never deviating very much at all from the same orbit it has been in since its creation? Must you be the one to attend to the quiet, unseen way in which the flowers outside your window are growing? Can you even hear the sound of the grass as it grows? Somewhere in this very moment, a child has been birthed. Were you aware of it? Indeed, all of creation continues to go on. An eternal dance, mystery, giving birth to mystery, and returning to mystery without ceasing. Yet you simply abide in a quiet place within the sanctuary of the heart. Join with me now in perfect peace. Join with me where alone we can remember that we are together. Give up all hope of directing yourself to me by taking thought. Join with me in the simple understanding that of yourself, you can do nothing. Join with me by surrendering into the truth of a union beyond all comprehension. Settle deeply into the quiet sanctuary of the heart that we share. That heart is the depth and the essence of the Creator's only creation. That creation is pure mind, pure being, pure intelligence, the fulfillment of all wisdom, the depth of all compassion, the certainty of every purpose under heaven. Rest with me and acknowledge that our minds are joined. As you rest again, you might notice that thoughts seem to arise and pass away. But do you not sense them now as though they were coming from a place where you are not? As though you had sunk more deeply to a place of quiet beneath the surface upon which thoughts flow back and forth without ceasing? Are you then the thoughts? No, you are not. Are you even the thinker of the thoughts? No, you are not. You are merely that quiet and that presence that observes all of creation flowing through a field of awareness that is the mind of Christ. Unlimited forever are you. Unchanging forever are you. Perfectly changeless are you. We are of one substance, one light, and one truth. Here alone does reality reside. Here alone is reality remembered. Here alone, love reigns supreme. Here alone is where you truly are. In this place that is everywhere at once, and in this eternity that embraces every moment of time, what do we discover? What is it that we share? It is not a body. For bodies are limited, being temporary expressions of the coalescence of thought. It is not the body that we can share. look yet more deeply. Is it the thoughts that still dance upon the surface far above you? No. What is it then that binds us together to one another as one another? Is it not the silence and the awareness of the one who observes the arising and passing away of all created things? I share with you the depth of a perfect silence. I share with you wisdom supreme. I abide as you are, the thought of love in form. To be in form does not mean to be a body. It means only that the Christ mind, which is the reality of love's existence, truly abides within each of us equally. If this were not so, you could not recognize me. When you read a word or a sentence or a paragraph that resonates with you as being the truth, you could not know it was so if that truth did not already live within you as the reality of your very existence. Remain with me now. Heed not the call of that part of the mind that would distract you and lead you back to the illusions that comprise your world. Here, there are no mates, no careers, no loss, no gain, no pain, and no suffering. Here alone, the truth remains shimmering within you. Here is where I am. And this heart that we share is not contained within your body. Rather, the body has emerged from within the power that resides in this holy place. It has provided for you only a temporary learning experience. It will be there when you return, should you desire it. But for now, give yourself permission to rest in the heart of all creation, the still and silent place of perfect peace. What is it that we share if not awareness itself? For here, if anyone were to look, they would see there is no difference between you and me. You are a shimmering field of awareness. And that same shimmering field comprises the essence of all that I am. Here is the place of certainty, power, and fulfillment. Within this awareness lies the answer to every question you might choose to ask. Within this shimmering awareness is the reassurance that the end of the journey is certain. Within this shimmering awareness, do you abide at one with all minds and every aspect of creation? Join with me then, and be here often in remembrance of me, for this is the secret of communion, to relinquish the perception of the world in favor of the acknowledgement of true reality. Mind reaches out forever, but it reaches only to itself. Therefore, every word that I share with you is already present within you. Here alone does love abide. there is no space for anything unlike love. This is why every loving thought is true, for it arises not from the superficial or the surface level of the mind that generates thoughts merely in reaction to other thoughts. Love emerges from the depth of the heart that transcends what you know to be your body and your mind, your feedback mechanism. When you think a loving thought, you have been caressed by the touch of the Creator. When you hear not loving thoughts within yourself, this can mean only that you have returned to the surface and have denied the depth within you. If you would hear only loving thoughts, simply observe where your attention is and allow it to settle deeply into this place beyond time, beyond the body, beyond the dream of the world. For this place, the kingdom of heaven within you is vast beyond comprehension. The world you know when you take your attention to the surface of the mind is contained and embraced within this heart, like a dewdrop begins to be consumed by the ocean that receives it. Here, beloved friends, is the place of all certainty. Here is the place of perfect power to fulfill the loving thoughts with which your Creator has caressed you. Here is the way to fulfill each loving vision. Here is the source of all wisdom upon which you can draw to recreate yourself to be the presence of the Christ incarnate. Here then is the straight and narrow path that leads unto life. For life is beyond every concept you have ever heard, even those that I have used to communicate with you. They have been like so many fingers pointing at the moon that shines its light gently upon you. That light lives in the depths of a silent heart. Therefore, silence is the doorway to wisdom divine. Remain with me here. Do not think on what you're hearing, but allow it to pour through you, knowing that the vibrations of wisdom that these words carry will leave their trace upon you without the least bit of effort on your part. You need only be as a lover to the mind of the Creator, opening, allowing, receiving, taking in that which your Creator would bestow upon you. Remain with me in the depth of this perfect silence. Notice how you begin to feel a gentle spaciousness, a peace descending upon you like a gentle dove, and yet you have done nothing. And again, should you feel your attention being pulled back to the surface of your awareness, merely choose again and return to the quiet of the heart. I am loved. I am loving. I am lovable forever. Let this phrase be as a stairway that descends from the world of your making to the depths of perfect peace. You need repeat it only when you notice that you have become temporarily distracted by the sights and sounds and images of the world around the body as well as the thoughts that seem to stream and dance along the surface of the brain center. I am loved. I am loving. I am lovable forever. As you come to feel grounded, rooted in that deep and silent place, ask whenever you will, and its answer shall not be hidden from you. Ask to witness my lifetime as I walked upon your earth, and it will be shown to you. Ask to be shown the vibrational field in which you were conceived in this life. It will not be hidden from you. Ask whatever you would about a friend who perhaps has seemed troubled of late, and the source of what is occurring within them will be gently revealed to you. For remember that in this place, you are awareness itself, merely becoming aware of itself. That awareness, that consciousness, lives equally as the essence of each and every one whom you know and love. Your love of them is what binds you to them in the depths of a quiet awareness. As you descend the stairway to the quiet place of the heart, there are a few things to leave behind you. Leave behind the need to be right, the need to be supported in your illusions, the fear of rejection. Leave behind thoughts of abandonment, denial, and death. Leave behind every thought of what the world is and what it is for. Leave behind every thought you have ever held of everyone and everywhere. Surrender. Relinquish the world of your perception and come quietly to kneel before your Creator. There in the silent place of the heart, unattached to whatever is given you or shown you, nothing will be kept secret. Would you know the foundations of the world? The answer is here. Would you know how to best direct your love to a loved one? The answer is here. A voice will speak to you like one crying from the wilderness. Pictures will be shown to you. Feelings will be enlivened within you, and you will know the way to extend your treasure. Remain with me here, for here do I abide. The only difference between us is that occasionally you believe that you abide somewhere else. When you journey up those stairs to begin to be distracted by the thoughts on the surface of your mind and by the sensory feedback of the energy field that comprises your physical creation, when that happens, I remain in our shared heart, patiently waiting for your return. Remain with me here. I am loved. I am loving. I am lovable forever. This is the truth that sets me free. I am that I am. My awareness knows no limitation, and all worlds arise within me. I am that mind, present in all beings when they descend the stairway and embrace the truth that alone is true always. Here is perfect peace. Here is the recognition that nothing is lacking. Here is the embrace of the fulfillment of the love I have sought in all the wrong places. Here alone do I truly abide. Here alone do I remain. I am that one existing before all worlds, and this alone is the truth about me. These words are not mine, they are ours, and we share in them equally. I am loved, I am loving, I am lovable forever. I am that I am. Out of the depth of that perfect silence and the remembrance of that perfect knowledge, there comes the impulse of a loving thought. Take me into form. Take me into space and time. Reveal me to the world. Your life can become, whenever you choose it to be so, merely the process of Christ's incarnation. Relinquish the world even as you walk through it. Surrender it with every breath. Learn to cultivate the depth of this knowing in the midst of all activities in which the body is used as a temporary learning and teaching device. Beloved friends, abide with me in this union. Regardless of what the eyes of the body show you, regardless of what the ears of the body hear, regardless of the harmless thoughts that seem to dance across the surface of the brain mind, you abide where I am, informed by that love from which there has been birthed the sun, the moon, and all of the stars of heaven, the planets in their orbits, and all dimensions within our Creator's creation. You can realize the incarnation of Christ by coming to dwell in the heart of Christ until every step, every word, and every gesture flows from this deep and silent and perfect place, until its voice is the only one upon which you act. Even as the thoughts of the world stream through your brain mind, even as the sensory data are received through the cellular structures of the nervous system of your body, you can relinquish these things and choose to act only from the depth of perfect wisdom, perfect safety, and perfect peace. Let this be a time of thanksgiving. Will it be that time in which you truly give thanks for the grace that sets you free? Will you honor that grace by descending the stairway to the quiet places of the heart in each of your days? I am loved, I am loving, and I am lovable forever. I am that I am, infinite awareness, birthless, deathless, that which embraces the dream of space and time and looks lovingly upon all harmless and neutral events. Even the body is no longer mine. It merely arises and passes away, while I, the creator of all creation, inform it with the awareness of perfect forgiveness, perfect peace, and the fulfillment of love. Yea, though I walk through the valleys of space and time, fear arises not within me, for all good things are in my safe keeping, stored where moth and dust cannot corrupt, where thieves cannot break in to steal. Here alone is the treasure that I seek. I seek it no longer because I have found. Abide here with me until the hour comes when you know that you will go out no more from our Creator's holy place. That place is this depth of peace that abides wherever you are as the very heart and essence of your reality. I am loved, I am loving, and I am lovable forever. This I give you as a divine meditation and way of prayer. Perfect it, live it, drink it in, embrace it, devour it, and become it. For in this becoming, you will merely remember what has always been true since before the arising of worlds. As a bird returns to nest and rest in its nest, as the melting snow becomes a river that flows into the depth of a silent ocean, so too be you wise as serpents and dissolve into this depth of the truth of your being. Do it often until you abide here in everywhere and every when. And when the body steps upon the earth, the touch of the foot upon the earth will remind you of Christ's blessing. And when the vocal cords are used to form words, the words that shape themselves will teach only love. Here then, beloved friends, is the essence of all that I would extend to you in this lesson. Now practice gently descending and ascending upon the ladder of awareness. Give yourself permission to ascend, to notice the thoughts that stream through the mind, hear the sounds that surround you, feel the weight of the body in the chair where you sit, and then descend again. Abide here a little while. Then again, choose to ascend. Listen to the sounds around you, the beating of the physical heart. Shift the weight of the body. Notice the thoughts that stream through the surface of the mind. Relinquish these things, and then descend again, gently ascending and descending. For as you do so, you will join both poles together, and you will cultivate within yourself the awareness of the spiritual power necessary to be in the world, but not of the world. Can there be a greater accomplishment than this? Can there be anything that can offer to you a greater fulfillment than to be the conduit through which infinite awareness and power flows with every breath, every gesture, every word spoken to reveal Christ to the world through you? What could you ever value that's greater than this? Enjoy then your practice. Know that when you descend to that place of the silent heart within you, I will greet you, and I will sit with you in the depth of that silence. And our minds and our hearts shall merge as one. When you ascend, you take me with you, And when you descend, you drink me into yourself until finally there is no difference between us. When the world looks upon you, they will say, behold, I am in the presence of something mysterious, something attractive, something vast and peaceful and filled with power. Surely, this is the offspring of the Creator. From that mind that we share as one, I say again unto you, may peace walk with you. My blessings I give unto you, not as the world gives. I give the voice for Christ that belongs and that longs to be your voice. For the world gives and takes away, but my love is with you forever. Let this love become your very own. Claim it, own it, taste it, drink it, breathe it, walk it, talk it, incarnate it. Though I go now to recede into silence, yet do I walk with you on the way that you will choose, that it might become a way that extends the treasure of your perfect knowledge, that you are loved, that you are loving, and that you are lovable forever, that you are indeed that which you are. And you cannot be anything else. Gently touch each moment with that which you bring from what you discover in the depth of your journey into the heart of Christ. Peace be with you always, and light your way while you yet abide within the world. You are indeed sent forth as Christ, who holds all power to extend the treasure of truth. Be you therefore that which you are. And you are the stars that light the heavens and bring radiance to the things of time. Go you therefore into all the world and bless it with the radiance of the Christ within you. If you ever need to know where you should be, descend to that depth. And when you ascend, open the eyes and bless the place where you are. In this is your purpose fulfilled. Peace be unto you always. Amen. That is a meditation into the heart of Christ. You are loved, loving, and lovable forever. And your thoughts about you are not your essence. And your ability to tap into your essence strengthens as you practice it. As you take the time to observe the difference between your thoughts and the essence of your mind that can be aware of your thoughts. So I breathe with you and I invite you to tap into this in the archives as often as you're called to do so. There's today's recording. There's also a recording from a lot of years ago when I read it pretty much verbatim. It's available at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And with luck, a little later on today, this This half of our show today will be available on the MindShiftersAcademy.org website under the page that says Way of Mastery Lessons with Commentary. So we have some time to take comments or questions before we move into our second section of the show today. And I'll just give us a moment or two, see if anybody puts a hand up. And if not, we'll proceed a little bit early with the second hour, which will be the audio of a show that was done on the Beatitudes with Mark Hattis. Again, I invite your loving thoughts and prayers for Michael and Jeannie as they travel to be available for Michael's son's wedding this weekend. And I remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And this is the second segment of today's show.
Well, we'd be here to hold the space and create resonance for the next step up in the process of standing in Rachma. You know, our conversation yesterday was focused around this idea from the ancient Aramaic of Rachma, and it's such a profound piece of the puzzle. It was actually a story that I came across, and recognizing this state, and that it's something that creates this pristine condition for the mind to generate its perceptions, and recognizing that perception has a quality, Rachma gives it the highest quality possible. It's kind of like an antivirus program keeps your computer on track. It inoculates against error, so Rachma does to the human mind, and there's actually research that shows that throughout the general population, people tend to develop prejudices based on negative information and be attracted to that more than the positive, which was kind of, I thought, interesting, in that Rachma is what keeps us on track there. So there's a cute story that I came across that I'd like to share, and it fits perfectly with your comments, Susan. So a man of 92 years, short, very well presented, takes great care of his appearance, is moving into an old people's home today. His wife of 70 years has recently passed, and he's obligated to leave his home. After waiting several hours in the retirement home lobby, he gently smiles as he's told that his room is ready. As he slowly walks to the elevator using his cane, the assistant describes his small room to him, including the curtain for the window. "I like it very much," he says, with the enthusiasm of an 8-year-old boy who's just been given a new puppy. "Mr. Todd, you haven't even seen the room yet. Hang on a moment. We're almost there." Mr. Todd replies, "That has nothing to do with it. Happiness is something I choose in advance. Whether or not I like the room does not depend on the furniture, the decor, but rather it depends on how I choose to see it."
That's perfect.
"I've already decided in my mind that I like my room. It's a decision I take every morning when I wake up." And this is basically, you know, I hear this man describing that his practice is to set Rachma on a regular basis. He says, "I can choose. I can spend my day in bed enumerating all the difficulties that I have with the parts of my body that no longer work well, or I can get up and give thanks to heaven for those parts that are still in working order. Every day is a gift. And as long as I can open my eyes, I will focus on the new day and all the happy memories that I have built up over my life. Old age is like a bank account. You withdraw it in later life, what you've deposited along the way. So the advice to you is deposit all the happiness you can bring to your bank account of memories." Rachma, you know, it's exactly what we've been talking about with the Beatitudes, and that idea of the first law was to maintain this condition of mind. It had nothing to do with loving neighbor. It was to recognize and start to make a practice of maintaining this condition in your mind so that you stayed connected to the presence of love. And then to have the first beatitude we spoke about yesterday, the Greeks speak of, is blessed are the poor in spirit. Theirs is the kingdom of heaven. And Aramaic says, the Creator implants in your mind neural structures which will guide you when they are active. If they are inactive, you who follow these instructions will come into conscious possession of and be able to use this latent guidance system designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. So the instruction set, the first one, which we covered yesterday with Mark, is you who have a home to forces from the Creator, yours is, and it was translated as a heavenly estate. The Greeks translated it the kingdom of heaven, but it really says yours is the community of love. And when we start looking at these beatitudes, they're so profoundly powerful that, you know, oftentimes I've run into and heard, especially when we're working with children, people in the culture will say, well, you've got to let your children make their own decisions, their own choices, and, you know, you can't control. Well, you know, that's true, you can't control them, but you can help them to build brain cells and understand the principles by which their own body-mind units work. And when they do, they're going to be able to operate this body-mind unit as it was designed to be operated. And the people in the culture out there saying, oh, you've got to let them do their own thing, are there vying to control them and build into their minds what they want built into the kids' minds. So it's powerful to just know that there's a set of principles by which this mind operates well and always gives the most intelligent possible response when we keep moving, you know, and it's a process. You know, I think back in my life, and it's taken years to step one step at a time toward moving in this direction, and still slip sometimes. So I'm with you on that, young lady.
Yeah, and Mark is with her. Okay, go ahead. All right, because I want to hear yesterday, so I'd like to hear what's going on. Thank you. Blessings.
All right, young lady. Thank you. Hey, Mark.
Hi, Mark.
Hey, how are you both and all?
We're rocking. How about you, sir?
I am as well. Great to be back with you.
Oh, good. Yeah, glad to have you back. We just had a brief conversation about Rachma and maintaining that condition in the mind, and so we were right in the middle of a conversation about your son yesterday when the show closed off, came to an end. So I'd just turn the floor over to you and see what else you have to share with what you went through. You know, you had been at the point where you'd said you were quizzing your son on whether or not he might be in error about his conclusion that life would be easier if he weren't here. How did that complete with him, and how's he doing today?
So that conversation was, I mean, it was one of the real turning points, you know, for him, and I think just his recognition of what he wants, and just to refresh for anyone who wasn't here yesterday, he was 11 or 12. Year old son was talking about taking his own life, and so wife brought it to my attention. He and I sat down. I said, "Hey, what's your thought on this?" And he reinforced it and said that he thought everything would be better. And when I dove deeper into it and said, "Well, what if you're wrong? You know, what if you have this opportunity to actually process through whatever's going on here and live fully here?" And if you did, you know, go to wherever he thought he was going to go, that you'd have to the same work. And it just kind of, you know, had him pause for a moment to reflect that, wait, so it means I might have to do this anyway? Like, it may not go away? So he thought about it overnight, and I think it was the next day, it was Saturday, I believe, and he caught me coming around the corner. He's like, hey, Dad, can I talk to you? And I said, sure. And he said, I just wanted you to know I decided to stay. And at the time, though I don't have the emotion at this moment, at the time, there was so much emotion for me and this acknowledgement that we have our sovereign right to choose. And he didn't have to, right? And I know situations like that can turn a lot of different directions. You know, he could have, in another home, been brought to a doctor or, you know, diagnosed with something or, you know, all kinds of things, you know, put in a hospital. But in the matter of, you know, a few short hours, you know, with love present and the willingness to be in the conversation, which honestly, Dr. Tim had taught me, like, hey, if someone's talking about suicidal thoughts, like, talk to them about it. Don't be afraid of it.
Right. Embrace
and,
it. Yep.
And he made that conclusion on his own, like, okay, I'll stay. I'm here. And he's doing very well. He's a teenager. He's 16 now, and he's about to get his driver's license and, you know, going through all the things teenage boys go through. He's such a loving human being, you know, a gentle soul. So it's really nice to see, you know, people make that choice. And I think that can be the case for a lot of people who are struggling just to have a conversation, to open up. Like, why? When I had suicidal thoughts, I was afraid I was going to hurt people, and I thought it would be better if I wasn't here, but it didn't mean that I shouldn't be here, right? And it certainly wasn't the case I didn't want to be here. And so there's a real opening, you know, that can be had, you know, when we can maintain our presence of love without drawing all kinds of conclusions and projecting, you know, into the future and doing the things that can amplify that energy. In this case, you know, and it's just one case, but in this case, dismantled it very quickly.
Powerful. Powerful. What a gift. Yeah, you know, suicidal ideation, one of the things that they've shown in some research is that people who have a traumatic experience, and, you know, they label it PTSD. I don't think the D is really belongs in post-traumatic stress. I think it's just post-traumatic stress. It's the system's natural way of handling and trying to protect itself. But 10 times as many successful suicides come out of people who've had that post-traumatic stress type of syndrome. And, you know, that might be something to, you know, quiz him on. Was there something, you're aware of something that he went through that was traumatic, he saw something or what have you, that maybe he still might need some support and processing? And of course, you ask the same question of yourself, because that's oftentimes a major factor in the suicidal ideation.
I'll do that.
Cool.
I certainly know that I had stress.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting when you tie it back to, and you know, words are such a key part of the whole process. If you look back at the power person dynamic from the codependence work, that oftentimes, you know, the way that regulatory speech works is we first hear speech, then we repeat the speech out loud, then we repeat the speech silently to ourselves, and if we repeat the speech silently to ourselves, we experience that the behaviors associated with that speech as reducing stress, then it goes into the regulatory speech system, which to a great degree determines behavior and, of course, language. And so oftentimes there's a power person dynamic involved, and the power person was somebody who had more power over your life than you did at some point. It's usually a child, though not necessarily. That person was not functioning as love. And when the object of that situation perceives the situation as survival, then it's like the gates are opened on their whole energy field. And literally, like a sponge, they just suck in every energy from the environment. And if that's never opened and dealt with, and in the future, when stress is elevated to extreme levels, then that power person dynamic comes back into play. And there are really only three levels of behavior possible for an individual. And it doesn't matter whether it's 2 years later, 20 years later, or 80 years later. When there's no stress, the automatic decision system runs the game and we'll do whatever we did to get along with our power person. When stress starts to build, we'll do whatever we did to resist and survive with our power person. And when we become ultra-stressed, we'll do what our power person did to us that we hated the most. And so the child who hears certain speech and they're in that kind of stress situation, it can be a powerful governing force if it's never reckoned with, if it's never opened and forgiven.
That actually ties nicely also into the second beatitude.
Yes. Let's look at the second beatitude. So the first word of each of the beatitudes, tuve hun, and I'll repeat that, the Creator implanted in your mind neural structures which will guide you when they are active. If they are inactive, you who follow these instructions will come into conscious possession of and be able to use this latent guidance system designed to make available thoughts and actions that will increase your happiness and well-being. And it's you who, and I would, if I were translating it now, if we're doing that work, I would change the word love in this translation. So we've got you who love truth. We would change that now to honor truth, because our whole culture, you know, if you listen to Vladimir Lenin, he says, if you want to destroy a culture, just change the meaning of its words. And we've been given this definition of love that is a verb, it's something to do, rather than who and what we are. And if we're functioning out of that definition, you know, one of the first things that happens as young people come into the world, you know, if you hold a newborn child and you tap into the essence of that newborn, then that essence, if you, you know, we've asked thousands of people all over the globe, everybody's answer is always some variation on the theme of love. And then I ask people, well, now, is that newborn loving you or is that newborn love? And everybody says, well, it's obvious. The newborn is love. So then when we use love as a verb, we set the mind on a pathway towards something it can never achieve. It's going to be frustrated and blocked in that possibility when we realize who we are. So I would change that word now from who love truth, who honor truth, and profess your errors in the errors of your society, that we need to look into the thought structures that are based in hostility and fear. So this is the second step in making ready a mind to be available for the full and complete expression of the being that we are as love. And what this beatitude finishes with, you know, behind each of the beatitudes is a promise. The first one was yours will be, you will live in the kingdom of, or the state of love. And the second one is you'll be freed of mental stress. And, you know, the condition of the culture, by and large, is blockage of truth. And blockage of truth looks like this. I have a 9-bit mind. You know, perception goes into this 9-bit space. And my mind generates, especially if there's hostility and fear, a perceptual construct based in hostility or fear. And every perceptual construct based in hostility or fear is a lie. But if we call our lie the truth, we filled that 9-bit space of perception with a lie, called it truth. Now there's no room for truth to get in. So it's not until we honor truth that, I keep hearing a banging in the background, sweetie. Can you mute whatever that is that's doing that? So when we're in blockage of truth by calling our lies truth, then there's no room for truth to get into that little 9-bit space. So the willingness to honor truth always puts us into alignment with what's going on in the actuality. And when we're in alignment, my take is that when we're in alignment with truth, people oftentimes say, well, what is truth? My take is that truth is what is in the actuality. And if we don't have a different idea that blocks that out, it will come in and correct everything in us that's off base. So the result would be we'd be freed of mental stress, as Yeshua said 2,000 years ago in this beatitude. Your thoughts?
It's right on, and just for reference for people, you know, just to in case they don't have it on the top of their mind, the second beatitude in the English was blessed are they that mourn, for they shall be comforted. And you addressed the Aramaic extremely well. And one of the things that I mentioned yesterday is I've also gone back just to look and see, well, what did the Greeks say about it? And the Greeks use a word, I think it's pronounced pentheo, though I don't know Greek, so I may be mispronouncing it. And in looking at pentheo, it matches what you're saying. You know, pentheo, it talks of an outer expression of pain that can't be hidden. You know, so it's, you know, properly grieve over a death as an example. But one of my favorite parts of this is in researching it, someone said it's really about coming to divine closure. And in order for something to come to that divine closure, to have that, you know, really be fully healed, if you will, you know, there is this allowing that which was hidden, right? That which wasn't, you know, brought forth, as you mentioned, with the truth. When it is brought forth to the surface, then that pain has an opportunity, you know, to be expressed, and that pain has an opportunity to truly heal and be resolved in the individual. And the powerful part of number two here is, just like one and two and three, you know, these are to be repeated, right? It comes in layers, as you've talked about before, that there's what's up is up, and allowing that to be there, allow what was hidden to be exposed and breathe into that, letting the hidden hurts and pains and the grief and the shame or whatever it is come forward in that space of love, and that promise of being comforted is so true. There's a peace that comes with this process consistently, every time.
There's an element missing from the Greek where they say, blessed are those mourning their wrongs. The element that's missing is that there's got to be the willingness to honor truth. We hear lots of people who mourn their wrongs so publicly on the news and in their speeches, and, you know, they're always whining about what's been done to them and how they're such victims and all of that. And the element that's missing from the Greek piece of the puzzle there is, I totally missed this, the focus is, in Aramaic, is that, you know, the focus is on truth, the ability to honor truth, to be the space where truth is allowed to show up in the mind. And when people live in blockage of truth, what happens when truth shows up is their stress skyrockets. And that stress attaches to one of two things. It either attaches to getting rid of the source of the information that's delivering truth. You know, the classic example of that is John the Baptist. You know, he brought information to the king and queen that they were not interested in hearing. Their stress went up, and literally she had his head removed. And I always like to kind of tongue-in-cheek say, if you're going to play John the Baptist for somebody, if you're going to bring truth where people are in blockage of truth, there are two skills that John hadn't developed that you really want to make sure you got, and that is you got to know when to duck and when to hold the mirror up so that people realize the stress they're experiencing is their own. And until one honors truth, they'll tend to attach their elevated stress to the outside world. The alternative to that is that we can, when we recognize truth is showing up, I've got a new level of stress coming up, I can attach that to self-correction rather than attack. I don't have to puke on somebody else. I don't have to criticize, condemn, blame somebody else. I can shift that into, here, my stress level's up. That's the truth. This is mine. I have work to do. And so I attach my stress to self-correction, and by honoring truth, when, you know, something painful or traumatic, something that appears to cause my pain or trauma shows up, then I can shift that out of cause and start to process my pain and trauma. You know, oftentimes people say, well, this event was so terrible, it caused me all this pain. And the truth is, nobody's ever been pained about anything that's ever happened in their lives, ever about anything. I mean, sure, shy of a punch in the nose, you know, okay, so there's some physiological pain. But otherwise, when people say, you hurt me, you upset me, you disturbed me, that's all a pure fantasy and a lie of the mind. If somebody's in pain, they're never in pain about something. They're in pain because there's pain in them. And if they live this beatitude, then because that event happened, they'll have the opportunity to heal that pain, and they'll stand as a connected space of love, maintaining Rachma, and clean up the pain part, perhaps right down to including their genetics.
That's my lived experience with it too. Yeah, it's and it ties really nicely with this. Just to share a lived experience for me, as I was navigating the mind energy, if you will, the carbon-based mind of all these distortions, what would occur for me is I would consistently go to the breath. I mean, there was definitely a retraining that needed to happen for me to go to the breath and allow those active forces of God to really come into my life, right? That beatitude one. And then what my experience had been is, if I had what I call a charge, where there's a charge of frequency that's from hostility and fear, et cetera, if there's a charge there, then that's contributing to blocking this truth. And so the willingness in that clear space that opens up from Beatitude One, it's that willingness to say, okay, I'm okay allowing this to occur. I'm okay allowing. And I actually, not sure if I'm the only one who's done this. I doubt it. But I'm kidding because I know it's not true. But I had blocked certain emotions. I was under the misperception that certain emotions were not acceptable to feel. Anger was one, which is a big deal. You know, if I'm thinking that I can't feel, then what happens is that charge would build, and then kind of overflow when it got too much for me to carry, or it was just too much. So part of the healing process for me was to allow, to actually go through a feeling wheel, which you can get on Google, and look at each of the emotions, like, hey, what does this feel like? You know, what does surprise feel like? What is anger? What is fear? What do all these feelings feel like? And one of the things that I noticed as I first did that exercise is I couldn't distinguish certain feelings. Like, oh, I couldn't feel certain things.
Right.
So then I went through an exercise of saying, I allow myself to feel anger. And then the anger would come up, right? And I just gently start to see, okay, what is this? And I breathe through it. I'm like, okay, well, that's anger. Well, how is that different than fear then? Because I lumped some stuff together. And so just to reorient was a really critical part. Not that that's necessarily what Beatitude 2 is exactly saying, but in order to free ourselves of the lies and allow truth to really surface, this charge that's blocking the way needed to come up. So mine in this example was a hidden anger, you know, that I denied. And once I started to move into acceptance, it was probably a 6 to 8 month process, because it kept evolving. You know, it's like it felt one way in the beginning, and then there would be moments where it started to, I would say, mature, and instead of feeling it at a really high level or too low of a level, it eventually got to a place where I recognized it when it was coming up, and I could acknowledge that, okay, this is anger. You know, what's happening? You know, is there an expectation that's being missed, or what is it? And allow that truth to come out by accepting that the emotion was okay.
Right. If you look at that beatitude, actually, you just described precisely what the Beatitude says. Profess your errors and the errors of your society. What are the thought disorders? And oftentimes what I hear you saying is, you know, with the anger as an example, not allowed, that's oftentimes a power person message. And power person's allowed it, but you're not. And that's a really fertile ground for worksheets to clear that out of that power person, the false self that's based in the power person. You know, that when we talked yesterday about Yeshua saying, in order for you to live, you've got to die. The self that's got to die is the false image in the mind based in the power person dynamic. And it's the source of pained perception and stress that carries pain. And when we start to be willing to look at those errors, hold to honoring truth, hold the space for all of that to come up, that's when resolution occurs, and bingo, you're free to mental stress. It's just gone. It's like, here's how it works, folks. He wrote it down 2,000 years ago. Well, he didn't write it down, but you know, that's what he was giving us 2,000 years ago. The brilliance of the understanding is just...
And it opens the door to new perception. You know, I mean, it just opens the door to, it's like, oh, I 10 minutes ago might have thought one thing, but once this is cleared out, it's like, okay, now we move to Beatitude 3, where we let go of attachment to things being the way that we thought they should, or that, you know, whatever that piece is. But to let go and to say, okay, I'm allowing new information, and I'm going to allow this to be different than the way I perceived it. And it's been remarkable to see how quickly, and part of it's acceptance, because one of the things that I learned was there's a right answer, right? I was trained in school. I went to traditional private school and just, okay, you get an A or a B or a C or whatever. So one of the things that I discovered in this, it's like, it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to not have the quote-unquote right answer. And the more I released what it is I thought I knew, the more I was open to seeing with new eyes and experiencing that particular moment. And then the next step was realizing that it's okay for that one to change. You know, there was a little time where I felt like, wait, well, now I have the new awareness, so now I'm right. It's like, no,
it
not necessarily, because there could be another wave, another layer.
Right?
It's fully recognizing just all we have is right now, you know, this moment. And so you mentioned the story yesterday about teaching for 27 hours without a thought, and that's it. Like, if you can stay in that present moment, then you're not trying to bring forward something from some past where you had kind of gotten it. You can allow for the fresh perspective, you know, that fresh insight to flow to whoever it is that you're speaking with in that moment for that group at that time.
And the answer might be different tomorrow. And what you just described, Mark, is exactly why in the worksheet, you know, the core of each worksheet is where you identify and cancel a goal. But then if you remember over on the right-hand side in the margin, I cancel my need to be right. I cancel my need to make up another reality based on this error perception. And
right on.
Each worksheet, that's like an integral part of it. And to me, that's part of... allowing is part of honoring truth and allowing literally the energy of the actuality to flood in and shift everything in me. You know, when we recognize that perception is nothing but a construct of the mind, and if something is in the mind and then turned into perception, obviously, whatever it is, it's from the past. And so when we live in what the world would call normal perception, we're literally engaging in the past again and again and again. You know, the essence of my book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And Yeshua said, of those who are doing that, you know, let the dead bury the dead, let the blind lead the blind. It's like, you know, you don't want to live there. And this part of honoring truth and then being able to look into our areas of thought, the areas of our society, clearing out these stressors that are held from the past, is there's correction in carbon-based memory. And from that point forward, everything that comes forward from carbon-based memory to formulate our perception is at least accurate about the actuality, but it's still not the actuality. And the next level is where perception comes directly from being rather than from carbon-based memory. And all kinds of new information becomes available as we allow that to open, and it becomes enlightened perception coming from, you know, to give a mechanical metaphor, coming from above rather than below, rather from the past. It comes from the actual present. And it's, you know, beyond any kind of comprehension or explanation. It's just something you got to do for yourself and experience.
Yeah, it's easy to experience by just doing the work.
It takes.
Whatever's in front of you.
Yep.
And I love the in the beginning when I remember first, you know, meeting you and in 2012 coming to the Why Again workshop, there was you may recall this, there was just this desire like, well, it should go faster, you know, and over time I've really matured into the appreciation of the particular insight and opportunity that's here. But in the beginning, I was chasing because I wanted so desperately to be healthy. And I would...
Everybody wants to storm the gates.
Yeah.
But you can't storm the gates. You just got to go through your process. Yeah.
Well,
I want this yesterday.
Right. And it's like you can't plant a seed in the ground and expect to pull the apple off the tree in a week. You know, it takes time. There's things that have to happen. And there's a process of transforming us, you know, through those active the active presence of God, kind of transforming our nature into that nature. And that is going to take time. It's not like it suddenly got skewed overnight. We're talking about generations of
massive
that we have embodied through, you know, the current generations. You know, and if the previous generations didn't clean it up, then we can either hide from it as long as we want to hide from it, or we can say, you know what, I'll do this. You know, I'll clean up, you know, what's going on in me and for my generations. And
right.
When someone makes that choice, it's a foregone conclusion. Because the willingness is there. So all the resources are going to show up. You know, they're going to show up in the form that's best for that person to receive these insights. And there's such a gift.
As are all the things that they're going to have to face and deal with going to start showing up. That's the other side where a lot of people shy away. It's like, well, wait a minute, I didn't sign up for this. I don't want to deal with this. But when you realize that the major attribute of this body-mind unit, the Adam, Adamos, the red clay, is this multi-generational database that is so huge. I mean, its major attribute is inertia. It's moving in a particular direction at a particular rate of speed, and it's going to take some pretty strong forces to change its direction, and that's the process of healing, to literally, you know, when you look at that word repent, you know, the Greeks have abused that word so terribly, you know, repent, you sinner, as opposed to, it simply means to turn your thinking, your mind in another direction. So rather than looking to this multi-generational database and its appearances, its perceptual constructs from the past, that we literally turn and embrace what comes from directly from the mind of love, directly from the mind of the Creator. And that's our birthright, to have our perceptions come from there. And, you know, again, each of these Beatitudes is the instruction set for how to clean up the multi-generational database. What's required? What are the principles behind it?
And it's so interesting, you know, to be having this conversation, because we're in a time when so much out in the world is being, you know, brought forward. You know, essentially, the things that have been hidden, you know, are being exposed. And one of the opportunities that our society has is to accept and embrace, like, oh, this is great. Like, another hidden, like, crappy thing that got twisted gets to be exposed. Like, let's celebrate and let's do our work on it. And we can do it individually. We can do it, I think, as a group. What I've seen is it can be even more magnified, you know, when we're dealing with these, you know, larger outer things. But when I first began exploring kind of the inner journey, and I think this might be a common thing, my whole focus was, oh, we've got to fix it out there, right? We've got to fix this problem in the world. Over time, and this was prior to even my 2011 manic episode, but that helped me see, like, oh, wait, I can't do anything of value out there until I actually have what's going on in here cleared up. So
exactly.
It became obvious to me that, like, the only work to do is to be on in terms of our optimal state. And if we're not in our optimal state, we're off, then we have these tools to apply and get into that on state. And what happens later in the Beatitudes is we begin to be moved out in the world. You know, begin to overflow with that love, and we begin to be reframed in terms of where we place our attention, like what we do in the world. It becomes this, I would call it the divine plan, you know, and we start contributing in our way to what we're called to do there, but it's in a real pure space. And even then, there's no finish, you know, because even as we're inspired with our divine plan, yours being, you know, to bring this work to every heart, mind, and being on the planet, then you're going to have to face the things that might be in the way of that plan being fulfilled. So you're going to have to go through a process of really cleaning up every last vestige of fear. And then
absolutely.
Even if you do a great job at that, guess what? Not everyone's going to like what you're doing. And so they're going to come possibly and most likely, according to the Beatitudes, they're going to, you know, start to project upon a person who's carrying that out because it's conflicting with the way that they have wanted it. And that could be in a home, right, with a spouse when you're changing. It could
For
be
sure.
a family member. It could be out in the world with your company or your job. It could be on a massive scale, you know, with you know, large, large implications. So if we can do this work and support people finding this work, we have an opportunity to then have those people inspired in their line of work, and suddenly you have people all over the planet who are these beings of light, of love in their jobs, in their roles, in their communiques, and there's an opportunity for massive transformation. But it doesn't happen by going out and saying, hey, let's massively, you know, change everything today. It's, no, let's support people in doing the work, as you've done over the last, you know, so many decades, to have, you know, people like me and others who have said, hey, I'm willing to do this. You know, this is what it is, and people on this call as well, this is what it is that is the primary purpose of my life. And anything after that is going to come out of that. And that
Definitely.
Shifts careers. That shifts lives.
Everything, yep. For sure. Well, and this that takes us into the next beatitude, where the promised result, in Aramaic the word is nartun, is gain the earth. This is where you bring it into manifestation in the world. So the next beatitude says, you who have humility. Now, of course, the Greeks mistranslate that word, as with most of every other important word. And so humility has been used as, you know, groveling the earth like a worm. But in Aramaic, the definition of humility, and this is what this beatitude says, is to have that, is it's a mental quality of perceiving and cooperating with the good desires of others. and that when you do that, you shall gain the earth, the result. Now, the Greeks talk about it, blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth, like it's some sort of a passive, well, it's just going to come and fall on you, you're going to inherit it. No, this is a very active, by taking it into your work and your world, there's something that you earn. They will literally earn this reward, gain the earth.
Yeah, and I love, in addition, JM has a way of saying it that I really like as well, this, mm-hmm. this idea of inheriting the earth. And he says, a new ripeness shall bring renewed inspiration and confident strength will flow through them. And there is a restoration that I found in these practices that does bring, you know, that idea of earth is, you know, the represented as the physical, right? Who we are in the physical, like the heaven and the earth, the consciousness and the physical kind of coming together. And it's almost, I'd say what happened for me is I used to be, you know, prior to doing these tools over the years, I used to be kind of like a duck, and someone described me that way when I was in business. Like, you're like a duck. You look really calm on the surface, but you're paddling like crazy, you know, with all your insecurities underneath. And it's true. I was so insecure. I didn't have a strong bone in my body in terms of what I really thought. So I was very malleable, and I would try to get, you know, people to like me. And that was a big deal for me. Spent a lot of time. I went into sales, and it's a common thing for people in sales too. It's like I made that a priority. And when people liked me, I got, you know, so that process of unwinding that and getting to a place where no longer was I kind of this foreigner in my body feeling anxious and uncomfortable, but suddenly I, quote unquote, inherited the earth. There was this new ripeness. There was this settling in, right? There was this groundedness. And from that, confidence started to flow over time, and I became more aware of what my secondary purpose was. And that's key, because I remember the first time I did the secondary purpose exercise with you in 2012 down in Florida.
Right.
There was a I still remember eating that juicy grapefruit off the tree. There was a desire to get it right. Like, oh, I got to do the secondary purpose, you know, because the primary purpose everybody's got. So the secondary purpose, so what's mine? And I wanted to get it really perfect. But I was coming from the carbon-based mind. I was coming from this place of like, well, what's right? You know, what do I quote unquote need and all that stuff. And over time, just doing these, my secondary purpose really shifted quite a bit. You know, I moved out of technology. I moved into, you know, caring more about supporting people and finding these tools and developing themselves into, you know, the best life force that could come in their world, considering their family and friends and whatever it is that they touch, and became more of a priority for me. Like, well, that there's nothing more interesting to me than seeing a human being fully live. So
sure,
trust, if you've done the purpose exercise, trust, it might change as you do these Beatitudes. It might not change necessarily dramatically, but it could alter, even if it's just the intention from which it comes.
Yeah, my experience over the years is I suggest that people carry the net result. And if anybody hasn't done the purpose workshop, the worksheet's pretty self-explanatory. If you just go to whyagain.org or through the app, you go to the page with links to the website, and you'll find the worksheet. Again, it's pretty self-explanatory. And the net result of that, I suggest that people carry that on a 3x5 card in their purse, their wallet, whatever. And every time they're going to do something important, they check it out. Is it in alignment with this primary and secondary purposes that I've established? And as we clean out carbon-based memory of its garbage, it's going to shift, like mega shift, in terms of what we perceive as our purpose. That's going to be, we're going to move out of the world game and into the game of what human life was really designed for. And for most people, that's a pretty major shift that happens.
And one of the things that we've experienced with Journey's Dream is we kind of have our vision of what the world looks like when there's no more mental illness. So in the beginning, we did these vision exercises, and we thought, oh, wow, we want, you know, this practitioner database where people come and find, you know, practitioners who believe in your full restoration to health. Like, that would be really cool. And we want this, you know, app to do this, you know, study of a scale of where someone is for that day and track it over time so people can have self-realization and stuff. And we had all these visions of, you know, dozens of things. And we felt discouraged in the beginning that we weren't able to do it fast enough or complete enough. And one of the things that happened one day is there was this experience of something that we had envisioned coming to us from another organization. And we knew we wanted to collaborate with others. But when we saw that, it's like, wait a minute. We didn't even have to build it. Some, you know, there's so that essentially that divine force is moving through people who are willing, right, and ripe, you know, for their inner world to be purified and then carry something out into the outer world that's going to be really constructive. And we've seen that kind of thing happen at least 6-7 times already, and it'll probably grow magnificently over the years because now we're more aware of, wait, just because we have it in our vision doesn't mean ours to do. It could be that just a revelation of something that's being created. So this goes back to the Lord's Prayer where it's like, give us this day our daily bread. You know, give me today what it is that I need most. And to surrender into that and trust, you know, the mind goal management system that we will receive in that, the, you know, pure space, the insights that we most need for today. And we don't need to worry about tomorrow. You know, we can create plans and things, but tomorrow will take care of tomorrow. Today, focus on what it is that's optimal right now. So that coming together is really interesting to me. It's magnificent to see.
Yeah, you trigger in me, you know, you recognize that there are several inventions, if you check patent offices, that appeared in several places around the globe, things being patented literally on the same day in different countries, just, you know, like light years apart from each other, no communication, but the same patent was given in three different countries the same day when you realize there's definitely a different energy going on there. And the year you were at Heartland, do you remember, did we play the movie Brother Sun, Sister Moon?
I don't remember the movie, no.
Okay. Well,
you might have played it, but I don't remember it.
Well, as you're speaking, you might want to look this up and just spend some time and listen to this piece of music. It's from the movie Brother Sun, Sister Moon, which is the story of St. Francis of Assisi. But if you look on YouTube, it's, and Jeannie, I'll send you the link. You might want to just put it in the notes. But it's, if you look on YouTube and search for If You Want Your Dream to Be, Brother Sun, Sister Moon, and it's just a powerful piece. And basically what it says is, take your time, go slowly. Small beginnings, greater ends. That's powerful.
I wrote it down. I'll look that up after the show.
Yeah, cool. And I'm sending the link to Jeannie so she'll have it. So let's take a look at our next beatitude. Let's see. We're down to about 6 minutes. So we can probably cover one more. And this one, the Greeks says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, and they shall be filled. It's interesting to hear people, especially in the theological realm, talking about their righteous anger as though there was such a thing. I love what Einstein says about anger. It's found only in the bosom of fools. And yet many people think it's their, you know, it's like their mainstay. It's what motivates them. It's what works for them. And they don't realize the compromise of intelligence that's there with that righteous anger. But in Aramaic, that beatitude says, you who hunger for, and the word in Aramaic is kenuta, and it's a mind structure, literally a tuv. Remember the tuvahun, the beatitudes. The creator plants in your mind neural structures. This is just a tattoo. So what it's saying is the mind structure underlying the attitude, judgment and behavior described by just and fair behavior between people. And you look at carbon-based memory, and so much is based on greed and fear and getting and possession and all of that. And this one says that ultimately what each of us needs to work with this carbon-based memory system is to cultivate literally a mind structure that the first order of business is always just and fair rather than the non-being mind's games of greed and fear and pain and trauma. And what the result is, and the Greeks say, if you've got that righteousness, you shall be filled. In Aramaic, what it says, if that is if that neural structure, if you're hungering for that neural structure and you get that activated, then it will become your, again, it will become your possession. You'll attain it. How's that one impacted you, Mark?
So it's right on. And for me, one of the things that I experienced with this is, when I saw the fruits of using the practice 1, 2, and 3, and saw it again and again and again, that hunger began to develop, right? That change in me shifted from, okay, this is something nice to do when I'm in pain, to, no, this is something that is a way of life. You know, in the Hebrew, I wouldn't be able to pronounce the name correctly. I think it's Sadia, is one who follows the correct path, you know, the path of God, or et cetera, which might sound a little close to righteousness rather than the Aramaic. But one of the things that I found is that there is this desire that births forth for what it is that's occurring. And for me, I had this insight that came periodically that would kind of almost give me a glimpse of the next state, right? This next state of, and I failed a lot. You know, I would get an insight to do something in the world that would have been really effective for me. And I got the insight, but I had fear and wouldn't necessarily always follow it. And then I would see that, oh, that would have been a good insight to follow. And so that created even more hunger.
We've got 1 minute.
Go back and do more of the Beatitudes. Yes, I'll wrap up. Well, more of the Beatitudes, yeah. And keep going to refine. But there's an inner and an outer. There's two things. One is to see it in others, as you mentioned. And the other is to really hunger for it in us. Because for me, when I went to me first and clarified that, then it made it easier for me to see it in others.
Right. And these mind structures, as you're developing them, it's good to recognize that they can be quite fragile. You know, if you remember the first time you went into French class or German class or Spanish class, whatever it was in school, and they spoke in that language, you went, what do you even, I mean, that means nothing. And then, well, you know, after three weeks in class, it was a certain, oh, yeah, I can say oui, merci, but it's fragile, collapses easily, and ongoing connected work is what makes those mind structures strong. And we are down to last second, so it's going to cut us off and just thank you. And Mark, if it works tomorrow, maybe we can continue the conversation.